And here we are. Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to Balcony Banter. We haven't had Balcony Banter for a couple of times now, so I'm so happy to be back with all of you. And tonight, it's a great, great topic. We've been looking forward to discuss it with our lovely guest. And he has been here a couple of times on Balcony Banter already. The Craig Master, Daniel, we're so happy to have you back on screen.
Thank How are you. You. Doing?
And you have a lovely, lovely, lovely background in all its glory, Tenerife.
I'm truly very, very blessed to have this background, and I appreciate your kindness in inviting me back on your show. So I appreciate it to all you guys.
Thank you for making time for us. Really, I really do appreciate that. And we got, of course, always here in the house, our lovely Ian with the beautiful background as well. It's the forest, right?
No, actually, it's the pond in London in St. James's Park. It's called the Duck Pond.
Ooh, always something new. So welcome, Ian. I'm glad you are here with us. You, our executive producer, basically, you set it all up. And we're lovely and happy to see again Chris and Tim. Welcome.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. And now let's go through the chat. And there are so many already here. We got 42 watching right now. And the first one, hello and welcome, Sarah Childs. Yes, and I'm going to message you later on today, promise. We got Derek Walker. We got Laney127, Anthony. We got Jeff Daniels. It's Craig. Nick Wiltshire, Bull78. Welcome, welcome. Ian at home and in the woods. And then
whoever
we got
is.
Alti. We got Des R. We got Ellen Fraser, Julie Wade. We got Anne-Marie Elton. Hello. And we got, let's see who else we got. So many. Shane Gorman, David Butler, Denise Pearson, Billy's Camera. Ooh. And David Longdon. All right. So I'm happy to see you all back in the house. Yes, it's another Wednesday on Balcony Banter. And yes, tonight's topic, we're going to be talking about addiction. And a lot of times when Daniel has been on Balcony Banter as our guest on the balcony live, we were talking about addiction and how you coped with it. You were very honest, speaking about your alcohol addiction. And tonight, I would really, really like to actually go into more talking about how you got yourself out of it. Because I think that's something that is very much needed. And we will also be talking about forms of addiction, because obviously there is not only alcohol or substance abuse. There are all sorts of addictions you can have. There can be sex addictions. There can be gambling addictions, compulsions, whatever we deal with on a daily basis, it can behavior patterns turn into addictions. And I personally always like to see it as something that we all share. It's not only something that happens to people who are addicted. It's something that can happen to anyone of us. And probably we will find out that we share much more, and we have much more in common actually on that on that way, on that path. So that those things that we will be talking about, for instance, the 12-step program, is something that you can apply. I like to apply it in my life on a daily basis. It's not just something you do when we're talking about addiction. So, yes, I would like to ask you, Dan, how was it living with that behavior, and how was it living with that kind of mindset addiction? Did you find it difficult to get out, or how was the way to get out of it?
Thank you, Julianne, for welcoming me here and asking me a question. And I would also like to say thanks to everyone who's watching and everyone who's involved in the in this balcony banter. So, what was it like to be an addict? What is it like to be an addict? Because I still consider myself an addict. In relation to what was it like towards the end of my addiction? Well, the end of my active addiction, as in when I was acting out in within drugs and alcohol, I don't really differentiate. But when I was using, I had lost hope. I felt spiritually, physically, and mentally broken. I didn't really want to live anymore. I'd kind of alienated myself from my family. A lot of my friends kind of stopped hanging around with me. The maddest people that I hung around with were even telling me, you need to calm down, you're going to get yourself into serious trouble. I was getting in trouble with the police. I walked around with clothes that were absolutely were not in a good, that hot rock burns on them. And for anyone who doesn't know what a hot rock burn, it's when bits of hash fall off, they burn your clothes. My trainers flapped when I walked, so because the soles are hanging off them, and every penny that I had went on drugs. I was talking about some the other day. I used to put my money in envelopes and write rent, write the things that I would have to pay, and then hide them from myself, thinking that I wouldn't find them when I needed them for drugs. So I'd write rent, hide it somewhere, I'll keep that for rent, and then I'd write something else, I owed this person money. But when it came to I needed drugs, I knew where they were because I hid them. I'd go and spend all that money. So I was always owing people money. I was selling drugs. I was doing a lot of things. I was robbing from people that were close to me and people that weren't close to me. And I just was a person that I was completely ashamed of who I had become. It was nothing to do with my upbringing. My parents taught me good morals. They taught me the right between right and wrong. But when you're in active addiction and you're all you can think about is obsessing about using, finding ways and means to get more. So I was broken. And, a lot of people say use the word rock bottom. And I was at my first rock bottom. Okay. And when I say my first rock bottom, it was like the deepest that I'd been. And luckily, that was enough for me. Some people need to take the trapdoor at the rock bottom and find a deeper rock bottom. But my rock bottom was that I was spiritually, mentally, and physically broke, and I didn't want to live anymore. And I thought that I was, what I thought I was just a mess up, that I was just going to be a failure for the rest of my life, and I might as well die or go to prison. And that was all I could see. Friends around me were ending up in mental institutes, different stuff like that. It's just a lot of madness and chaos in my life. And luckily enough, I was working for a guy who had a landscape gardening business, and he took me on, and I would turn up on a Wednesday. I was supposed to be there on a Monday. I always promised to be there on a Monday. He'd keep money aside from my wages, and he'd buy me food because I was very skinny. I was not looking after myself, and he helped me. And he said to me one day, he says, do you think your life is unmanageable? And do you think it could be to do with drugs? And I was like, I'd never really thought. I just thought I was a mess up. And he said, why don't you come to a 12-step meeting? And for reasons I can't mention which particular 12-step meeting I go to. But so he said, there's an open 12-step meeting on Saturday night. And I thought to myself, well, Saturday night is party night. And, you know, I think I don't want to miss party night. So I said, well, I can go to the meeting and then I can party afterwards. So it doesn't really matter. And it's only an hour out of my life. And if I like it, it's great. If I don't. So I went to this meeting and I seen something that I'd seen in no one else. I seen honesty. I seen the best way I can describe it is I seen almost like a spiritual light inside the people I was looking at. And they were telling me about the way I felt right then. And they told me that I had a disease and that there's a medicine for that disease. And that's this 12-step program. So I came back to another one. And from that day until today, which on the 6th of August this year, fingers crossed, all things going well, I'll be 23 years clean off everything. And it was a change in my life. Now, the biggest thing about that is I had to want this, because if I didn't want it, I wouldn't put the effort into it. So I put the effort into it. I did the things that were suggested to me. I got regular meetings. I did all the things that, you know, I had to delete the phone numbers out of my phone from the drug dealers. I had to stop hanging around with certain people. I had to choose a new path because the old version of me was always going to use again. So I needed to change. So I needed to implement a program of change that would lead me into the right direction. So I implemented it. And as you said, what I like the word you used was application. So I had to work through these 12 steps and understand them. But it's one thing understanding them. And if you can understand them, great. But if you don't apply them to your life, it's not much point. Yeah. So I try and apply them to my life. So the way I try and conduct myself in life is I conduct myself with honesty, integrity, do the next right thing, try and be good with the people around me, be decent, be kind. I'm not saying I'm always those things. You know, sometimes I can revert back to different things, but I try my best to do the next right thing, to live a spiritual life and be decent. And since I've started to implement those things in my life, and it's a daily maintenance, I meditate daily, I pray daily, I do things that keep my spirituality well, and my life goes a lot smoother. And I'm not saying it's easy. I mean, I lost my mother last year. It was one of the hardest things I've ever been through.
Yes, he's lost there for a second, but he made some really, there you are back again.
Someone tried to call me, but I was going to say, and it basically, it's changed my life to today. And I just have a far better life now, you know, and apologies for that interruption.
You made a very good point there, the application. So actually it's the practical bit. You can know things intellectually and know a lot, and we all are pretty much aware that certain things are maybe not good for us, and we shouldn't do it, and we know it, and then when we still do it, we get very much frustrated about it if it happens again. So then you ask yourself, why did I do it again? But that's exactly what you were saying, the knowing-doing gap, what I like to call the knowing-doing gap. Knowing something intellectually doesn't mean that you know it in your heart, that you actually act it out. So that willingness that you were talking about, that you had to want it deep down from your core, and you felt that there was something better there, something more honest, that made you actually act it out. And yes, I mean, there's that saying, I think it comes from the AA, your best thinking got you there. How would you say this applies? When we talk about mindset, we speak a lot about mindset. How can you maybe say that your thinking got you to that step, what kind of thoughts were you maybe involved in when you were still addicted? What change of thoughts and thinking happened when you got yourself gradually out of it? How did that change?
So I see myself as having a disease, right? And the best way to describe this is I would regularly find myself not now, but when my disease is active, I'm not at ease with myself on the inside. So I seek outside solutions. So I was a very hurt person. I was seeking things to fix myself for this. The best way I can describe it was the hole in my soul. Yeah. So this empty feeling that you can't run away with because it's with you. So when I was using, I tried to run away from it. Physically might have moved place, might have changed situations, might have changed departments. And I was always trying to figure out how to fix this feeling inside by grabbing stuff from the outside. And when I was using, it was a quick fix. So if I picked up a drug, bang, I could feel some way normal. Because when I started using drugs first, it was a great high, it's a great buzz. But in the end, it was like I was just taking them to feel somewhat normal. Because I felt bad. Even when I was doing drugs, I still felt really bad inside myself. So I was always seeking outside solutions for an inside problem. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when I started to get clean and I left down the drugs, it was like, oh my God. I was like, I'm insane. Like I literally, so when I removed the drugs, I realized that it wasn't the drugs. They were a symptom of what was going on inside me. So I needed to deal with that internal disease by applying the 12 steps into my life. And the most important spiritual principles were open-mindedness. So being open to new ideas, being willing, and being honest. So if you're not honest with yourself and the people around you, then it's very, very hard to move through the steps, because you're kind of lying to yourself and the people around you. So what changes came into my life from applying those things? Just kind of what can be best described as miracles. I became, you know, more aware of what was going on around me. I learned that I had many good points and bad points, you know, so it wasn't always, because I'd either think I was the worst person in the world or the best person in the world. But what I learned over time is I'm just human. Yeah. I have good parts and bad parts. You know, I try my best to follow the right path in my life, but I'm no better or no worse than anyone else. I'm just myself. Okay. And starting to be okay with myself, because when I looked at myself in the mirror, I hated who I was. I hated myself. I hated everything about myself. And starting to learn to love myself. And I don't mean like, oh, look at me, I'm great. I mean, actually say, do you know what, Daniel, you're an okay human being and it's okay to be you. And God has made you in this certain way. I don't want to go into the whole God thing, but I have my own spiritual beliefs. But I was built in such a way that you're okay. So they were the changes. And by spiritual practice, and I mean by, like, it's when I do boxing, for example. When the first time I went boxing, I couldn't throw a jab. I didn't know how to throw a jab. So I threw the jab many, many, many times, and it became an automatic thing, and I could learn to box a bit better. Now, with the meditation, I can say, oh, yeah, I meditated. It didn't work. So how many times did I meditate? Not very many. So it takes practice. And it's not always perfect. So I meditate daily on a consistent basis. Yeah. And it's that practice consistently brings a level of calmness into my life, a level of chill. And it's taken a long time. Like for the first 5 years of my recovery, I was so anxious. I suffered with massive anxiety, like, you know. Yeah. And it was just consistent practice. You know, the old saying, Rome wasn't built in a day, you know. And it's consistent because I can fall back to the old way by not practicing those things on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I got a question for you, Dan, if I may.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The I'm not struggling with drink. I've got plenty in the house. Yeah. But I did struggle to stop smoking back in the year 2000. And one of the things that before I stopped smoking, one of the things that bugged me was the thought of being without it. So it wasn't actually the physical addiction of the tobacco. It was, for me, it was the actual thought of what would I do if I didn't smoke. Was that similar for you? I mean, you're talking about anxiety there. Did the anxiety start when you decided to go into recovery?
So the first question, so I'll answer the second question first, actually. Did the anxiety start? I think the anxiety was already there. It was just being covered by the drugs. So the drugs, so I believe the drugs worked for a certain period of time. They calmed all the anxieties and fears and all the stuff. Because my mother, God rest her, would always say, growing up, I was a very scared child. I was scared of everything. I remember my father said, we're going to England. And I was like, Dad always takes the mickey out of me about this. He said, and I said to him, I'm not going to England. They have snakes in England and war. Yeah, this is what I said. I was a young boy and I thought, because I'd been watching news or something and I was afraid to go there. And I had so many fears about life. And my mom would always say to me, you know, she said, like, look at you now, like, you're living in another country. You took so many risks in your life. You achieved so many things. Says, I remember you as a boy, you were just full, crippled by fear. I was crippled by fear at times. So when I found drugs, I was afraid of nothing. I'd do everything crazy. And then when I stopped using drugs, it was like all that stuff came back. Yeah. And here it was smacking me in the face. And I had to learn how to go through that and change using spiritual principles and practice and written work. I also did counseling. I did cognitive behavioral therapy. I did many other therapies throughout my life to help me deal with certain things that go on in my life that make my life more easier and just easier for me to cope with. And I've had traumas in my life that I've always said to myself, I'm not going to keep it in my head. I'll talk about it. I'll go and see someone. Like when Mam died last year, I went into a shell. I felt like I literally just got lost in my work, got lost in Netflix. I barely talked to Sahar had a very hard time living with me, and I just shelled up into myself. Yeah. And I said to myself, do you know what? I need to get out of this. Otherwise, you know, things are not going to work out in my life anymore. I just went into hurt mode. And I got a counselor. I went to a grief counselor. I worked through. That lady was fantastic. She brought me through talking about it, opening up about it. And all of a sudden I started to, that the shell started to crack and I started to connect with people again. And it's like, so that's to answer that question. I've forgotten the first question. I should have asked that to answer that first.
That's fine. Do you remember it, Tim?
It was the same question, really. You know, it was like when you're giving something up, when you decide to give it up, it's the angst about what's going to replace it that stops you from starting, if you like.
Well,
that's what happened with me anyway.
Meetings is what worked for me. But when you talk about cigarettes, I actually gave up cigarettes 2 years after I got clean. And what I applied the process of something different, which was like I stopped thinking about what I was giving up and thought about more what I was taking on. And I thought about the fact that with the cigarettes, I was taking on being able to smell and taste my food. I was when I gave up cigarettes, it just changed so much. And I thought about all the positives as opposed to giving up something. And I understand you because I thought about, well, how am I going to take a phone call without having a cigarette? How am I going to have a coffee without having a cigarette? Because I attached everything to cigarettes.
Correct.
And I just kind of thought to myself, I turned it around and thought, well, what am I taking on now I've stopped smoking? Yeah. So instead of giving up something, I was viewing it as taking on something because I did cigarettes slightly different to the using. In the sense, I read a book called Alan Carr, Easy Way to Stop Smoking. Really? And I read that book and I stopped. I read it five times now, right? And then I stopped. So,
yeah.
I never read the book, but I did have a trick. And the trick was, it was my 40th birthday, wasn't it, in America. Mm-hmm. And we'd invited a load of people. We're having a barbecue in the backyard, and the backyards in America are massive. We had a massive deck. Everybody brought a grill, and I said, bring your own meat. So I brought all the wine and beer and soft drinks and what have you. And then everybody brought their own meat. And this one guy came, and we were in Virginia, so it's where they made cigars. And he bought a box of 50 cigars, and we passed them out, and we smoked them all, and said, that's it. And the way I did it is I said, I will start smoking at lunchtime tomorrow. And then at lunchtime tomorrow, I didn't have enough, what's it called? I didn't have enough, I've forgotten the word now. Alzheimer's. what is it when you, I didn't have enough
Die heißt auf Deutsch?
Willpower. I didn't have enough willpower to start. So at lunchtime, I said, I'll start after dinner. And then after the first day, I was sort of proud that I hadn't had a cigarette. And the next day, I said, I'll have my first cigarette at 11 o'clock in the morning. 11 o'clock came. I thought, I'll push it out till 12. So I just kept pushing it out. So I didn't actually give up smoking till a year after I gave up smoking. I just didn't have one. I just didn't smoke one.
That is a massive, like, so in the early days, it was something that worked massively for me. It still does at times, but not, I don't really have the obsession to use at the moment and haven't had it for some time. And I'm not saying it won't come back, but at the moment I have a good reprieve from it. But in the early days, and to anyone in their early days, and if there's anyone watching this right now in their early days, or they're starting that process of going to meetings or just stopping something, like Mount Everest is a massive building, yeah? Or it's a massive mountain, should I say. And the thought of climbing that is a huge task. But if you think about just a couple of steps up, so for me, when I came into recovery first, and I thought, not using for the rest of my life, I thought, how am I even going to manage that? But you know what? I'm just not going to take drugs for 24 hours, yeah? And sometimes the obsession would be so strong, I say, you know what? I'm not going to take drugs for the next 5 minutes. And when that 5 minutes is over, I put it off for another 5 minutes. Or I'd reach out to someone, I'd ring and say, look, I'd ring someone, I'd say, do you know what? I'm thinking about taking drugs, and have a chat with them. And then that obsession to use would die down. And over time, the obsession would appear in longer terms. So it wouldn't come as much. And after some time, then, you know, it wouldn't be so strong. It might be just a fleeting thought. I mean, I had my first fleeting thought last year, not long after my mom died, and I had an argument with someone, and I was just thinking, do you know what? I'm going to have a drink, yeah? And then I was like, what is wrong? Where is that coming from? And all the work that I'd done just clicked into play, and it said, that's not going to help anything, having a drink today, yeah? So, but like in the early days, that obsession can be super strong. Sorry, I'm talking loads and probably talking too much, so I'll keep quiet for a minute.
You are making some really good points there. The mentioning the stress levels, like obviously last year, what happened when your mom passed away, that caused a lot of stress and anxiety again. How do you think about today's society that we live in? I mean, it's a fast moving world, and we have to adapt to change very, very quickly, and stress levels are getting higher and higher. I mean, how would you say, apart from maybe meditation, what other things could be good and beneficial in those moments to deal with stress levels? Because obviously we're not only talking about addiction, alcohol addiction or substance abuse. There is there are many, many situations that make us do things and act out in our behavior that is very much addictive. Yeah, even thinking, obsessive thinking about something, negative thinking, depression even is a form of how you call it, Daniel, a dis-ease. And dis-ease, a body that is not at ease. So that's the total opposite, basically. How are there any other ways apart from meditation or yoga that you can see beneficial for taking off some of the stress in our society?
Good question. I would say something that I always fought against in the early days is exercise is a fantastic form of release, be it walking, be it running, be it whatever sport you're into, but some sort of exercise, because, you know, it's a physical, spiritual and mental disease. So something that will give you that way of releasing. I think talking to people is a very important thing, because, this the old saying that secrets die in the light and grow in the dark. So it's a really good thing to be able to share what's going on for you. I did last year, I bottled up. I shouldn't have bottled up, but I just went into myself. And also kind of stress. You talked about stress. So I probably have some days I have a million things going on around me, and I used to really just crumble under that sort of stuff. But it's like, you can multitask to a certain extent, but it's like, okay, so what do I need to do? And it's like a domino effect. It's like, it can start with, I have to do that. I have to do that today. And then it's like, oh, and then that tomorrow. And then that, and then all of a sudden you're literally consumed by what you have to do for the next 3 years. And you're like, oh, Mark, I can't handle this. Too much. It's too much. And you start panicking. Yeah. So instead it's like, you know what? What do I have to do now? I have to send that email. I'll do that, and then I'll do the next thing. And next, so it's like that concept of, I'm not going to use take drugs for the next 5 minutes. Well, I'm not. I just have to do the next thing. So I have to do an email next. I have to do that next. I have to do this next, and just do one thing at a time instead of getting overwhelmed for it. Or do you know what? I'll do that in a minute. I'll go make myself a cup of tea. I'll have the cup of tea. And then I'll do this, and then I'll start into the process. But I'm not going to think I have to do all this stuff for the rest of my life, because that's where I get overwhelmed. It's like, you only have this moment. So what's the next thing you have to do in this moment? The rest ain't guaranteed. So that's kind of the way I would deal with the stress of, because there's so much stuff, social media, all this sort of mad stuff going on around you all the time. And I struggle with that too. I struggle with the whole YouTube thing sometimes. People probably know I haven't done a YouTube video in a while because I've taken a break, because it's a lot. I know it's just doing videos, but sometimes it can consume your life. There's a lot of stuff going on around that and all. So sometimes you have to take a step back and just center yourself and say, you know what?
Absolutely.
I'm in my body. This is where I'm at, and I need to take care of myself for a while. Yes. Yeah? And just feel okay. And it's just breaking it down into that simple stuff. I hope that made sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I did. I had to cut last week and the week before a balcony venture, which, I'm not sorry about, but it just needed, I just needed a little bit more time for the things that I had to do. So it's important.
I've got you back, Juliani. Don't worry.
I know. You did wonderfully. No, but I mean, it's easy to trap into that and to get addicted to this hustle culture that we are living in today's world. Ian, you are very quiet there. I'm sure you will have to say a lot now. But yes, it's easy to go with that hustle flow, if you want so. And it's important to stop in that very moment. And if you feel a sensation of being overwhelmed, just stop and feel that pain body that you're feeling. Feel that moment, even if it doesn't feel right, and you know exactly something is out of balance, something is not in order, so to say. So then it's time to listen and maybe take a step back, because if we continue with that hustling, in the end, we're not going to win that race at all. And it's not about getting to the destination. It's a whole journey. It's a journey that we need to embrace and also stay kind to ourselves. And yes, Ian, you have been very quiet so far.
Yes, I've been very quiet. I've been quite enjoying what Don said. But I want to pick up on a wee point, a point of emptiness.
We're going to lose the microphone in a minute.
I got many years ago when my mother died. I was left with a complete empty bucket, and basically I didn't know where to go. It was a case of try and do this, try and do that. I could never do it. I was sent to see the local our local doctor, and we explained the situation, where I was and what I was doing. Quite simply, he turned around to me and he says, "What do you want to do? I can give you something, but you can do it yourself. What do you want?" And after I thought to myself, I says, "Right, I'll do it myself." I just took the willpower there and then to go and get myself correct. It took a while. It took a long time to start. Easy steps to get going, just to get my head right, because I had this empty space. It did take a long time, and I just gradually worked myself back up again. It took me almost a year before I'd got myself back into my normal running mode, as we would call it. You know, I feel for people that maybe don't have the willpower, and this is when they actually turn to something else to relieve that pressure, if you want to call it, on themselves. Maybe it's something simple. But no, I did it myself. I wanted to do it myself, and I was successful. I mean, other people can be successful as well, but I think it's in your mindset. You have to set your mind to it yourself to go and do it. You know, that's... something you said, Tim, about smoking. I smoked for a long, long time. I smoked when I was a young lad. And I gradually got worse and worse, and you smoke more and more and more. Served my apprenticeship, served my time and that. And we always had your gang, your crew, at lunchtime and that. You sat down in your bucky with your... We are around the table and what have you. And the cigarettes would come out. Boom, 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 round the table. Then boom, 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 round the table. So you would come out and you were, smelling, right? The next day, same thing would happen again. So until eventually, okay, it was my turn. Because my bloody pocket was empty. So I said, what the hell with this? I haven't got enough money in my pocket to buy blooming cigarettes every day. I just chucked the packet there and then. And stop smoking. But again, it was bloody difficult to start with. I'm not fair to admit it, like, it was difficult to start with. But I just decided that was it, end of story. It finished up that in that particular time, we went and sat, the non-smokers went and sat in another hut. And that was how I got out of it that way. Like, and I've never touched a cigarette since. That was many years ago.
Same as me, Ian. We did since my 40th birthday in the year 2000, I haven't touched a cigarette. In fact, I'm an anti-smoker now, as a lot of people may know.
yeah, quite
yeah, and so So it's Craig. 43 years free. I never started.
My microphone is just about to lose juice, so I'm going to swap the microphone over. Give me 2 seconds.
Okay. I would like to ask about when we were talking about the 12-step program, and I would like to share with you that slide. I put it on earlier on. So obviously there are different steps, 12 in total. And the first one here at the bottom, the surrendering bit, obviously is, I guess, the hardest one. Daniel, which one was the one that you had the most struggle with?
It's interesting. I've never seen this before. It's quite good. It's basically 12 spiritual principles, isn't it? Let me have a look. I'm skipping through these. I would say patience.
Patience.
Hands down, that's probably my impatience is probably my biggest character defect. Hands down, I would say. Sahara will tell you the same.
Yeah. And again, we can see from this 12-step program, I think it's great, and it applies in so many more situations in life, not only in addiction or substance abuse. When we talk about mindset or changing mindset personal development, even. If you want to apply it there, it's as well great to use. We were talking about stress levels. Oftentimes, it's this moment of surrendering and saying, "Yes, I got a problem here. I'm just overloaded. Just stop and maybe turn for help." Turn to somebody who you can talk to, or if that's not your thing, then try to feel into yourself, maybe to do some kind of exercise or whatever form you more applicable and comfortable with. And I think these 12 steps are great to use in many many situations. And Dan, absolutely, I think you are doing an amazing work with the service part of it as well. It's the service. Could you elaborate a little bit on that point, the service part? I think you are sharing a lot. And that is part of the service.
Yeah, I think I would 100% agree. How, like, just to clarify that those particular things that are the steps you're showing there are obviously different to the 12 steps of a 12-step program in recovery in the recovery that I'm in. We would more call them 12 spiritual principles. But when you talk about service is a paramount part for me of. So I was told many years ago, I was told by my sponsor, he said to me, to explain what a sponsor is. A sponsor is a person that guides you through the steps. I have a sponsor. I had one to this day. And he said to me, he says, if you're on the edge of the bed, it's a lot easier to fall out of the bed. But if you get you right into the middle of the bed, it's a lot harder to fall out of that bed. So he said, what I'm suggesting for you now is, to be of some service to the fellowship that you're part of. So be it making a cup of tea at the start of the 12-step program gathering to helping be a secretary or doing whatever it is, or, for example, sharing your story. Over the years, I've done service in prisons. I've done service in many different places. It's a huge part for me of keeping a deep connection with the fellowship that I'm part of. And if I can help someone else, it also helps me spiritually as well. And there's nothing gives me joy more than seeing someone coming from the depths of addiction and darkness to a level of light in their lives. I've seen people who've lost connection with their families, who have got their families back in their lives, who have gone from being in prison to being counselors or psychotherapists and helping other people. So, you know, this whole idea of that an addict can't get clean or can't change, I mean, for me, that, you know, that's not true. And a lot of people say, well, he'll never change. And, you know, some of the people I look at and I think they're going to die from this disease surprise me and change. Like,
yeah.
So service is such a huge part of my life. We started an English-speaking fellowship 12-step meeting here on the island, me and another person. It's still running to this day. The meeting's grown from having a few people in it to having over 20 people in it. And for me, there's nothing nicer to see than a fellow addict get the miracle that I've been given. And I say a miracle because I came from nothing. I mean, spiritually, physically, and mentally broken. And here I am. Look behind me, this beautiful sunset. I have an absolutely beautiful apartment where I share with a beautiful lady. I'm very blessed with the life that I have today. I have a business that I've built up from scratch that I'm proud of. I've had a beautiful connection with my mother. I got to be beside her bed, and she got a son for 22 years. I held her hand as she passed. I loved her with all of my heart. She loved me with all of her heart. I had that connection. I have so many connections in my life that I didn't have when I was using it. Where, you know, so to see someone else get that, or to be able to share my story, help someone else see that there is a way out, you know, is something very special. And I'll just say this one more thing because I can go on a rant. I think it might have been you that said this, Julianne, before, but I can't remember. Someone said it and I was like, that is amazing, right? So you're stuck in a well, a deep well, right? And a doctor walks past and he goes, can you help me out of the well? And the doctor goes, oh, I don't know how to help you out of the well. Here's some tablets. Yeah. I'm not saying that doctors all do that, by the way, just in case someone gives out. But, you know, here's something, I can't help you. Then a businessman walks by, a lawyer or whatever, and you're in that well and looks down and goes, I can't help you, mate. You're stuck in that well. Then another person comes by. Oh, you're stuck in that well as well. Here's the way out. I'll help you. I was stuck in the same well. So for me, there was people ahead of me that had been stuck in that well before, and they showed me the direction out. And now I'm outside the well. If I can help someone else out of that well by showing them the direction that I took out of that well, then that's a true, true blessing in life. And I guess that's the service. Hope that made sense. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and that's what community is about, isn't it? As well, sharing and you never know when it clicks for somebody. You know, you can always sow the seeds, and then you will see if it makes sense at some point, and the light goes on. You never know, and most of the time the very close people around us are maybe not the right ones to help. They obviously want the best for us, but maybe they're not the right ones to talk to at this very moment. Maybe later on in time it makes more sense, and it eases the whole transformation process, but the initial legwork that needs to be done is maybe with some other person that is totally detached from you but shares nonetheless a similar path. So thank you for your words. Christine, you have been very, very quiet so far.
Yeah, I know. Am I audible?
Yes.
Without vacuum film?
Yeah, we're on the iPad now.
Okay. On the iPad.
Yeah. That's not a lot to say for my part. The only thing I'm missing is drinks without alcohol that are tasty in restaurants.
In restaurants, they're tasty.
No, she's missing them. There's when we go out and Christina, I drag Christina with me. Then she's got the choice of fizzy water or Fanta, and you know. So, I mean, we've been to some places where you get a nice fruit cocktail and stuff, right? But you're paying 6, 7, 8 euros for that. So, a reasonable cheap drink that tastes good, that with no alcohol in it, would be something she'd look forward to, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Dan, maybe you know a place where they do nice smoothies or some lovely cocktails, San Francisco style.
Oh, I never even.
There's a lot of them here, actually. Very blessed here on the island to have, like, better than Ireland, anyways. Things in Ireland have changed. They've now got an alcohol-free bar. There's a massive alcohol-free movement within Ireland that wasn't there when I lived there. Like, because when you said you didn't drink to an Irishman back in the day, they go, "What's wrong with you?" You know, you know, that'd be the first thing. I even get it sometimes here. I say, "Oh, you're Irish and you don't drink. What's wrong with you? You're a strange Irishman." I'd be going, "Well, no, I'm just a person that doesn't drink." But here, in relation to, I'm trying to think, there's lots of nice little cocktail places, but it's pricey when you order a cocktail. Like, my favorite mocktail, which is without alcohol or I don't know what you call it, but anyways, I like a nojito. So a nojito mean mojito without alcohol. I love a nojito, and they do them sometimes with different flavors, but they are very expensive considering it's ice, a bit of sugar and some Sprite and some mint, but they are very tasty. I like a pina colada without alcohol. They're nice because I like coconut. And then I just like water. A lot of the time lately, I've been just going, do you know what? Water with some ice and lemon is actually, when you've got some nice lemon in it,
that's or what
some
you're drinking
nice
it.
Fruits in it, it's nice, you know? Simple. But like,
it's only at the corner bar. There's a really nice water.
Yeah.
And Little Germany, of course.
Yeah, sometimes when you go to places, the water doesn't taste good either. Oh, the alcohol-free pina colada is called a nada colada.
Nada colada.
Nada colada.
I like it. I like it.
I'm just going through the little comments, and we got
to Webby. I've got to say, hi Webby Boom.
Hi Webby Boom. Boom. Chakalaka. You, Laney127 says you truly are an inspiration, Daniel. I hope you're really proud of yourself. I'm sure you are. And Maria Albornoz dice, amazing lessons from you, Daniel. Muchas gracias. And Martina Bolger, or I don't know if I say that correctly.
Bolger.
Bolger.
Yeah.
Okay. You should be so proud of yourself, Daniel. I know your mom is smiling down from heaven. Oh, yes. And
thank you.
Then we have, it's Craig. Dan, you should be so proud of yourself for being able to do this. I'm sure everyone in this chat is too. Yes. Yeah. And we are very happy to have you, all 52 people still watching. We're coming up to 54 minutes, and I would like to go around the table. Go around the table and start off with Ian.
Thank you, Julianne. All I can say is, Dan, thank you very much. It's taken us about 7 months to get here. We had this planned for last year, but thank you very much. It's a pleasure listening to you, actually. A pleasure. I'll finish up with something from my Stay Positive collection. Don't judge yourself by your past. You don't live there anymore. Keep moving forward. Setbacks happen to everyone. But when the misfortune occurs, don't waste time and energy resisting what is happening and asking, why me? Instead, adopt a positive mindset. Accept the reality you are faced with and focus your energy on what you can do to move forward. Over to you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yes, absolutely. The past is over. We can only learn from it, right?
Right.
And now I'm going to ask Christine, what are your last words for today to finish
off? My last words never touch something else until you walk at least 2 miles in the shoes.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
At least you'd be 2 miles away and you've got the shoes.
Yeah, you need to be safe.
I destroy all the
love should be shared. Good. Tim, what are your last words?
My last words are thanks, Dan, for coming on. And you're an inspiration to a lot of people, and you're an inspiration to me. I'm not at the stage yet where I want to give up, but I think I mean obviously I don't think I have a problem, but I probably do. But if you can, do you want to share where these meetings are, or is that something that we can find out online? Or,
well, that was going to be my final thought. Whenever you
good. One question though. I am not and have never been religious. Is it a prerequisite to be religious?
No, they're not religious programs.
Okay.
And it's they talk about something specific, which is a higher power, and a higher power can be a group of people, or a higher power can be literally. So if you think your secret is a problem, sharing it with someone else is literally a power greater than that problem, because you're sharing that problem. So that's a higher power. So it doesn't have to be the God concept, because lots of people obviously don't believe in God, and some people do, and some people have different gods, so it doesn't really matter. It's not religious at all.
I mean, being a scientist, I was always skeptical about sort of crystals and vibrations and stuff, but now we've got into the quantum theory and string theory, vibrations and crystallization is getting more popular, so they're probably, they were right in all along, you know. So eventually we may end up as scientists believing in God, crystals and vibrations, but calling them something different, you know? And so, but we're just not there yet, but that would be interesting.
Yeah, yes. Daniel.
Yes.
Last words.
First thing I want to do is just show you that, right? Okay.
God.
And we're talking about darkness into light. Yeah. So I've been given the gift of that to wake up in the morning because of, you know, seeking help and changing my life. So my final message is this. If you are sitting here maybe on catch up or watching it live and you've listened to what I said and a little bit of my story, I was an addict who didn't want to live anymore. Now I love my life. I crave it. If you are in that place right now and you are suffering deeply, it might not be addiction, but you're suffering with something deep and mentally and hurtful, please reach out, seek help, look for someone who can guide you through whatever you're suffering with, because don't suffer in silence. I don't want to see anyone suffering. And if you're an addict, there's many, or of any sort, there is many 12-step programs out there. Yes. Seek help. Honestly, it changed my life. I cannot be more grateful for what I have today, and I owe it all to seeking help and the help of other people, because I couldn't do it alone. You know, I can't, we can. And that's my last word. Sorry, I went on a bit longer, but that's it. There you go.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you for being our guest tonight, for sharing from your heart. And yes, you've been, like many people were saying in the chat, an inspiration to all of us. And yes, I hope some of the things we were talking about tonight made sense and yeah, maybe switched on a little light, whether it's on substance abuse or any kind of addiction or even thinking patterns or depression or wherever you are in this very moment and you don't feel at ease, right? So not feeling at ease in this very moment with something, you can apply, like Dan suggested, those 12 steps. There are many, many ways out, and yes, talk about it. Reach out to people. I also apply the 12 steps in my mentoring sessions, and I do and I do appreciate gratitude. Daniel and everyone were saying thank you. So gratitude is a higher power, and we were saying and talking about religion and spirituality. Those two things have not really much in common. So there are ways that that are more of a higher power, and you can just be silent, and listen to your own inner self, even if it's very painful in one given moment. It might be your key moment to make that change. So thank you everyone for being so open, honest in the chat and on screen. Thank you everyone, and yes, we wish you a wonderful week ahead, and see you next week with another.
Before you finish, Juliana, before you finish, I'd just like to say, if you're watching this right now, 53 people are watching this, please share this video on your Instagram, on your Facebook, on your YouTube channel, on your Twitter page. Yep. Let's get Juliana up to at least 1,000 followers, because I think she deserves it. She does really work very hard, not only at what she does, but also she's invested 2 years into this Balcony Banter, and she needs some payback. So please share it all the time, and don't forget to like and subscribe, and ring that little bell for notifications, and tell everybody about Juliana Nendel. And if you need any help,
thank you,
and you want to talk to somebody, give her a call.
Well done.
Thank you.
We'll find you.
That was your drop, your service.